Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we just have a little test that we need you to take. How do you feel about it? Okay, I'm just kidding, no test. But I was in the back speaking to everyone, and I learned a new term that I think will put to rest the term we've been using all along. So the term is houseless. Understand? Houseless. What does houseless mean?
Well, I also learned it from Ibrahim Mubarak. We were talking about where did this come from. Ibrahim Mubarak was a founder of Right to Dream 2, and he's now with Right to Survive and advocates for for policies that allow people to have molecules and exist in space even if they don't have housing without being criminalized. He's a great community partner, and he's a member of the Village Coalition, member of the steering committee. And a couple things, two things that kind of strike me as core to why we use that term. One is houseless is about not having a house, right? It's about there's no walls and a roof in your life on a regular basis. But that doesn't mean you don't have home. You don't do home things. It doesn't mean that you don't have a family. It's very common. It's actually the norm on this, if you're living without housing, to live in a street family, to have a street family. You know, if you in under a regime of constant sweeps, if you do have to go to the line to get to receive the things, as Margie was talking about, to be a recipient, you got to have someone look out for your stuff, or it's going to be gone. And it's either going to be gone because it gets stolen, or it gets thrown away by the police. Right? It gets swept. You get swept like garbage. Your home is treated as garbage, but it's still your home, right? So that's it. That's one thing, is that people who are often called homeless are not homeless. They have homes. They home is a part of their life, and it focuses the conversation and the mind on the real issue here. The real issue is these folks don't have housing. When we say homeless, there's a bubble that comes up in the mind of all kinds of things. Like, you know, let's imagine you're in a conversation with a friend over drinks, and someone says, "And this homeless guy," and you have a picture in your head, and it's associated with all these ills and causes and all these problems that person has that made them this thing in your mind called homeless. You don't know that. You don't know the first thing about their experience. You don't. And there, for every person that doesn't have housing, there's a different life story that got them to have no housing. It's not everyone is suffering from mental illness. Many are indeed suffering from PTSD. When I did the point in time count for the Multnomah County this year, when I was a volunteer in the point in time count, every single person I talked to in my zone said yes when I asked them if they have PTSD. And I spent all day walking around Hazelnut Grove and the Overlook neighborhood, and I talked to a lot of people, and every single person said they had PTSD. But not everyone's a drug addict, not everyone's an alcoholic. People do use drugs, and they do drink, and people who have housing use drugs and drink. People that have housing, you know, have mental illness, right? And aside from certain subsets of the unhoused population, we share these problems relatively equally, right? There are some chronically houseless veterans that have combat experience have very much higher elevated rates of multiple severe mental health problems than your average population. But if you're just looking at the general folks in the community that don't have housing and the general folks in that neighborhood that have housing, rates of alcoholism are really similar. Rates of drug substance use disorder are very similar. Rates of chronic and severe mental health disorder are very similar. So what is the issue that we really need to figure out? What is the problem that we're talking about in our community with regard to the things that we think of normally as homelessness? It's housing. So houseless focuses the conversation there.
So everybody, you're going to take a pledge that you're going to use the term houseless from now on, or we don't let you out of the building. Okay. All right. We have some new faces up here on the panel, and we'd like to start off with, I'm going to start off with Desiree, because I think she's not only fabulous in her purple, but she is also a spunky, fabulous, direct shooting from the hip kind of woman, and I like that. So here from Desiree Rose, she says, "I am an original American Vietnam Army veteran and a daughter of a Korean War Army veteran. I've lived in 28 states so far and have been homeless in a majority of them, 7 states with children. I have been talking to people for years about how the homeless, there's that word, houseless are treated. Then God brought me to Hazelnut Grove, where I don't have to fight alone anymore. Hey there, how you doing?
Hi.
Can you welcome me,
right,
please?
Hi.
Yeah. Can you tell me a little bit about just your experience and then tell us a little bit about Hazelnut Grove?
Well, I'm kind of the odd duck, if you will. Not that I've ever been anything different, but people have always asked me, what are you? And I've told them I'm a professional survivor, which I am. But I guess some people would term me a professional homeless person because it's happened to me so much. There's so much I could say about being homeless and traveling across the country and being a lone female. Oh, that's a treat. Yeah, and then all of the things that I've seen, and I've talked to a lot of people. I've been talking to people for years about how the homeless are treated, and no one wanted to listen. But I kept doing it because I guess it's my bailiwick. You know, I'm a veteran, which I already had PTSD before I became homeless. But, of course, when you're homeless, you get PTSD. The things that you have to go through, it's difficult to imagine. It was really hard being a homeless mom. Oh, my God. It's so hard. You know, you go to a fountain, your kids are swimming around for pennies so you can get something to eat. When somebody comes, get out of here, you can't do that. We had this happen in Sacramento, which we were basically the poster children, poster family for homelessness when they did their thing. And this lady complained and ran and found a guard, and the guard's like, lady, what do you think that's there for? Leave him alone. You know, my kids kept scooping up pennies, you know. We were hungry, you know. All the times that I have lost everything I had. This time, this is not the first time I've been homeless in Portland. This is like maybe the 6th time I've been homeless in Portland. I've been here over the years and left and come back and left and come back. This time, although it was really weird because this time I went through a lot of first-time things I never did before. Camping under a bridge with Melissa. I found Melissa and said, hey, and she said, I said, under a bridge, really? Okay. Not something I ever did before. I lasted about 10 days before I said, oh, I'm out of here. I can't even breathe, much less think. You know, so I skipped, and I ended up down on Springwater. I was down by Johnson Creek when everybody was out at 82nd, just waiting for all the stuff to come to me because I knew it was. In particular, I was waiting for that fella that caused the whole thing. But he didn't get down there. And then Parks and Recs papered me, although I had a beautiful, pristine camp. I'm a veteran. What did they expect? It was gorgeous. And somebody I met said, I know this activist guy. Let me get a hold of him. So they got a hold of a heed who had a couple ladies come out and check me out. And I thought, well, he's just checking to see if I'm okay. They made sure and left their numbers. If anything happens, I said, okay. So when they papered me, that was the first thing I did, called up, somebody's got to help me. They want me out of here now, and I've got too much stuff.
So for clarification, when you get papered, that means it's time for you to move.
Yeah, and while I was there, I got papered to move. Mm-hmm. And while I was there, in fact, just before this happened, mm-hmm. somebody had found my camp. I believe it was a teenager of one of the lovely neighbors who didn't want us around. Mm-hmm. And they took one bag. I'm pretty sure it was this young lady. One bag off of my things. Just one. I don't think they even looked. They just grabbed. Mm-hmm. Too bad it was my life. Mm-hmm. Everything. The DD-214, birth certificate, medical bill, all my paper, my life in a bag, mm-hmm. gone. It took me 3 months to get the DD-214 back. How, people over the years, I've told them for years, they were like, why don't you get on your feet? Hell, after somebody just took all my stuff and I don't have any paperwork, how
would you suggest I do that?
And with children, oh my God, it's so hard, you know, to have to tell these kids, have to be a good parent while everyone is down on you, you know, and you're supposed to, the workers will get on you about parenting. Sure, I'll put my kid in a corner. What corner would that be? You know, it gets difficult. But the heed came and got me and took me up to Hazelnut Grove. He pitched me to the guys there, told them I've got a lady veteran who patrols the park with a bull whip.
Which, as you can see, she has it with her today.
I'm not a native Oregonian. I was raised in the real Old West, Nevada, so I carry a bull whip. You know, a number of times being a homeless female, I have had a number of people who have made me divest myself of my weapons and then look at me all surprised. Well, I'm a veteran and I'm homeless and I'm female. Yeah, what you expect? If I don't look after me, who's gonna? What? He told them there was a lady vet with a bullwhip and they said, bring her here. We gotcha. Then I got there and said, do you really know how to use that? You wanna see? Yeah. So that's how I got to Hazelnut Grove, which is fabulous. All these years, I've been trying to tell people that the way they're treating the most vulnerable, the people that need the help the worst, is wrong. You know, and even though our camp's a little, our village is a little quirky, we've got some characters, we're all characters. Some anarchists and this and that. I myself am a Christian, and I know it's somewhere in the Bible, I'm not exactly sure, but I think it talks about the leaf that's blown around, that's me. Because God has sent me from place to place. Sometimes I'm meant to give a message, sometimes I'm meant to get one. You never know quite, or to help someone. And when I got here, all of a sudden, to Hazelnut Grove, all of a sudden I wasn't alone. And I knew that God brought me there for a reason. For once, finally, I could fight the fight and I didn't have to do it all by myself anymore. That's right. I had people that would stand with me. So that means the world to me. And I love having my little pod. You know, they were talking about T1. I was like, not this puppy. No. And there's a lot of people who object to what we're doing. But really, like I said, I'm an original American. My ancestors were here before it was a country. The way I look at it, I'm homesteading. That's how we made America? That's how we got out here. You know, what am I doing that is so unusual? And why is having some pride and some dignity so something that I don't deserve? Why is it that I can't have that? And I know what it's like here. I've done the programs, okay? And they don't like me because I tell it like it is. And I understand what that lady said, the processes. I have seen some of the things that happen here. Not just all over the country, but here. I have seen my Vietnam-era brothers kicked from gutter to gutter for 60 years. And now I look at them, and they're shells. They're destroyed shells of what they were. And the system did that to them. I know how it happens. I know how it's done. I've seen people broken down, and I've suffered for not breaking down. I've suffered for retaining my independence. They have more than a few times told me that they were not real happy with me. And I pretty much said, me too. So the problem is, a lot of times, is that there's a plethora of information, tons of it. So usually when I get with somebody, it's like, now what? More even? Yeah, that's what it's like. And I've had people telling me for 30 years I ought to write a book. When you spend all your time surviving, you don't have the strength anymore. I'm too tired to write a book. I'm ADD. My fingers can't keep up with my brain, so unless I get a ghostwriter, I'm really in trouble.
We're going to find you a ghostwriter.
We're going to find you. Although there's a gal getting ready to do a piece on me for Street Roots, should be coming out soon.
Very good. When is that happening?
Mine pretty soon. She just got hired, so we've only met once. So
very
she's,
good. So she's say the name still, of it again is for Street Roots.
Yeah. She's still trying to get some of the basic information, which I told her might take a while.
That's okay. That's okay. We'll wait
so,
on you.
Yeah.
I know you have a lot more stories there. Can you tell me something? When you first got to Hazelnut Grove, what was your first impression? When you first got there and saw?
Oh, when I very first got there, one of the young men in our camp, actually, he's the brawn of the camp, he told me, sit down and I'll take care of everything. And they rolled in all my stuff, which was basically one pickup load, right? Yeah, yeah. And I sat there, and then I thought, I was talking to these people trying to figure out what was going on, and in my brain I'm thinking, oh God, and I still have a tent and all that stuff. And he come running up to the table, and he said, I've got everything ready for you. Your tent is up. I put all your stuff right next to the tent so you can put it in the way you want. And I was just like, wow.
Yeah.
It was just awesome. I got up there and all I had to do was put my stuff in my tent and I was ready to go. He was so awesome and I still love him to death. He's amazing. And everyone took me in as part of the group, even though I thought, well, I'm kind of an odd duck. And I looked around and I said, well, gee, a bunch of odd ducks around here. So it seemed like I kind of fit in, even though we all are different. You know, I mean, we've got some LGBT people there. Mm-hmm. Some of us are Christians. Some of us are anarchists. Some of us don't know, haven't decided. Mm-hmm. We're all a bunch of people that come from different stories, and there's a whole lot of independence going on, which I'm chock full of that. So so I fit right in.
Very good. Yeah,
can
go
I
ahead.
Add something?
Sure.
We all do come from different places, but we are finding culture in similarity, a new culture. One of the other things that Ibrahim kind of taught me was, you know, the houseless community is in a way its own tribe. Like, we're kind of economic refugees together. We have our own culture. We have our own language. We have conversations that regular people, houses. We actually have a name for people that live in houses.
You call them houses?
Houses.
Oh, they're houses.
Yeah, the houses.
I'm a housie. I didn't know. Should I be mad?
You should be. Oppressors, all of you.
Oppressors.
No, but we share our oppressions. We share, you know, our joys. We share our strengths. Tribe. The idea of community together, even though some of us are transgendered, some of us are tall, some of us are short, female, male, it doesn't really matter. We have a shared common, not just adversity, but also within Hazelnut, we have this real goal of growing space, creative space for each other.
That's great.
Which has just been really, really, really awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can people from anywhere come and visit and say hello? I mean, what is the respectful way to do this? Yeah, let me hear from you.
Yeah,
tell me.
He's the mayor.
He's the mayor.
Mr. Mayor, I need help here.
My name is Marvin.
Come on and help. Give him, let him use your microphone.
My voice can carry. My name is Marvin Ross, and I'm a grateful member of Hazelnut Grove and stuff. And so it's a process that we do, you know. If someone want to come now, we invite them to our Saturday meeting. We have Saturday J meetings every Saturday at 10 o'clock. So it's open to the public for the first hour or two, so they can get to know us and stuff. So the second hour is for personal business stuff that goes along that we have to discuss amongst ourselves. But that's the beauty of it. We welcome visitors any time day until 10 o'clock and stuff. You know, we got that 10 o'clock hour where it's a quiet time and stuff, you know, just like you would in your neighborhood. Everybody got to shut down at 10 o'clock. You do your party and stuff, so. Well, 10 o'clock, that's quiet time, so. But anyone is welcome to come there. You know, so that's how we actually got to where we are today, is because we were visitor-friendly, and it's because of the people that Joe Biden's cars. I was wondering what was going on there. You know, there's people just walking by. You know, we make those people feel welcome to come up in here and stuff. That's the only way you're going to get to know us, you know. If you're standing outside, you're going to always have that fear. You're going to always have that misconception. You know, just like I like to tell people, I'm not invisible. Look at me. Talk to me and get to know me. I may be a big old black man, but I might be the friendliest black man you ever met. You know, and that's how we got a lot of the donation, you know. I had to make myself be small, you know, just to help people to come up in there, you know. And I like to call it the limousine process, you know. Like, when I was a little kid, I always used to dream about a limousine pulling up to me and just giving me a bag full of money. And that's pretty much what happened at Hazelnut Grove. People start pulling up in their cars and stuff, giving us food, giving us clothes and stuff, you know. And next thing you know, we start building, getting building supplies and stuff, you know. Like, it was, to me, it was like a magical experience. I remember the first day I met Fajita stuff. Actually, it was on my birthday that he gave me that first interview. And I was like, oh, that's the best birthday present I ever had. Because, you know, now it's been like 56 people that have come through Hazelnut Grove. So that was 56 people that if I had been out on the street or in a shelter, I probably wouldn't have took the time to get to know. Yeah. But just because of Hazelnut Grove, I got to know those people, I got to understand those people, and I got to realize that those people are me. So if I disrespect somebody up in Hazelnut Grove, I'm disrespecting myself, you know. So Hazelnut Grove has taught me a lot of things since I've been there. I'm 57 years old, and Hazelnut Grove have given me the ability to use all of my math skills I learned in school, my geometry, my... you know, just algebra and all that, because I was able to build a house. When I was going to shelters and stuff, you know, I wasn't able to utilize that skill that I knew that I learned in school, you know. Like, okay, so I know how to do fractions. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought when I was going to school, I would never have the ability to use that. What am I going to do with a fraction? What am I going to do with a 16th? What am I going to do with an eighth or a quarter of an inch on a ruler? Mm-hmm. But since Hazelnut Grove, I'm like, whoa. Gee, I did learn all of that stuff when I was in school. Mm-hmm. I can build a house. You know, now I know how to cook for 30 or more people. Mm-hmm. Today, I learned the importance of sanitation, you know, getting rid of all this garbage around us and stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. I learned the importance, you know, of respecting everybody that comes up around me and stuff. I lived in Portland since 1981. I could not name 55 people in my neighborhood. Today, I know everybody in my neighborhood by on a first name basis. Yes. You know, those people are my friends. Those people are my family. I learned to respect everybody up in there. Yeah, we're going to have disagreement, but just because we had a disagreement, does that stop me from respecting you as a person? Mm. No. You just get over it just like you did when you was a kid.
That's right.
You know, and you know, since it's a village, it takes me back to when I was a kid. When I was a kid growing up in Arkansas, I knew everybody in my neighborhood. I could walk, if I was hungry, I could walk up anybody's house and ask them for something to eat or get something to drink, you know. Their doors was open, you know, it was a village. And it wasn't until Hazelnut Grove that I got that essence back. And I'm like, wow, so this is what I've been missing, that connection. You know, I lived in Portland for a long time. I could walk the street in downtown Portland. And being who I am, I'm gonna acknowledge you. You might acknowledge me back, but I'm gonna say, hey, how you doing? You know, like, what's up? And so Hazelnut Grove has been, it's been a lifeline, a lifesaver. I mean, like, they should have more villages. I remember when Joe and Jose first came out there, they was talking about building 100 of the village. And I'm like, whoa, 100 of these villages? Like, wow, that's too much. But then, you know, you get more knowledge. Portland have 95 neighborhood associations. Mm-hmm. So Portland has the ability to have 95 Hazelnut Groves.
That's right.
So why not?
That's right.
That's right. Just, homeless people come from all aspects of life. You know, just like my biggest thing, I go around asking people, it's three things for sure in Portland. You know somebody who's a drug addict, you know somebody who's been to prison, and you know somebody who's homeless. So what are you going to do about it? How can you make a difference? You know, how can you build another Hazelnut Grove? I mean, say, well, can you put another one? That's the question. I mean, like, it's going to be homeless people. Jesus said that in the Bible. It's going to always be poor people. But do they have to be poor mentally, spiritually, and emotionally, psychologically, and all of that?
Come on now.
Yeah, like I said, it's a new terminology, homeless. When Lewis and Clark first came over here from the East Coast, did they have a house? Did they?
He had a boat.
They had a boat and they covered wagon. Was they homeless? No, they was not homeless. Because they was with friends, they were with family. They had everything they needed right there. They had that connection with everybody who came over there in that covered wagon van. They was not homeless. Because like the song used to say, wherever I put my hat, that's my home.
That's right. It's an attitude.
I slept in a tent. But when I stopped doing what I was doing, did I say I was going to my tent? I said, no, I'm going home.
That's right.
I'm going home. Because that's where my spirit is. That's where I love being. You know, like I said, I didn't have four walls for say, like a wooden building around me, but my tent was my home. That's where I went for my peace. That's where I went for my serenity. Mm-hmm. So just like anybody here, when you go home, don't you want peace and quiet? You want your kids to just settle down for a moment? You want to go home, probably get that beer, get that little glass of wine and stuff, you know, make you something to eat. Be able to do that at Hazelnut Grove now because we have our dignity. We have our self-respect. You know, the world can't take that away from me. Because like I said, I was homeless for a while, but I didn't carry that persona of being a homeless person. You know, I remember one day I was on the bus, and I just came from church, and this other guy gets on I'm talking to this man on the bus, and he gets to talking about this other homeless person that gets on the bus. So I let him say what he had to say. Then I said, what do you think about me? So he looks at me up and down and stuff. He said, are you all nice and dressed? You looking okay and stuff? I said, well, I am that homeless person you're talking about right there, okay? Mm-hmm. Just because I don't carry myself like in a downtrodden, beat down kind of way doesn't mean I'm not homeless. So everybody deserves some kind of respect and dignity and so no matter what, you know. And even I've had to confront, you know, like people that's in the system, just like people at TPI, people at the Portland Rescue Mission because of the way that I seen them treat someone that was homeless. You know, I'm like, hey, that's you still got to talk to that person with some kind of respect and dignity, okay? Just because they're going through something that you've never been through, that don't make them less of a person. You know, so my
If you could tell any of us, if there was one wish that you had, what would you want us to do?
To treat everybody you meet with respect and dignity, and don't judge that person because of the way he dressed or whatever, mm-hmm. You know. Go talk to that individual. Get to know that individual story, you know, and that's what I guess when I'm trying to greet people every time I meet somebody, to acknowledge that person as somebody that's valuable, somebody that's worthwhile, you know. Don't just treat everybody like worthless, because everybody has some kind of intrinsic value to offer. You know, just like everybody at Hazelnut Grove have inspired me to be a better person. You know, so that's what it's all about, you know, bringing us all up to a high level of understanding and awareness and stuff. Mm-hmm. So no matter who you are, you know, like I said.
Amen.
I love Hazelnut Grove and I always will.
Amen to that, yes. Same question for you. What do you need us to do?
Oh, well, I wanted to tell you about Snowmageddon. That's what we called it. January. Oh, my God. I'm sitting there in my unfinished tiny home under every blanket I could get my hands on, like this many. I was like, just to pull them up, like, okay. So I'm under there, and I'm scared. It's cold. And we're calling for help, and we've got sponsors who are coming, and people that aren't even from our neighborhood that are bringing us water and wood and propane in a neighborhood that has been not, is really not very supportive of us and doesn't want us there. So we have these people who aren't even in our neighborhood bringing us these things. We had, on two different weekends, we had some Mexican-American families, poor people, who came on the Saturday to provide us with a hot meal while other neighbors were discussing committing acts of domestic violence against us. And I sat there and thought about all these people coming to help us and these people coming and bringing us hot meals. And then I sat there and heard about Karen Batts freezing to death in the garage and that little baby boy, and all I could do was cry because it never should have happened.
Yeah, that's the mirror. That's when you hold the mirror up on us and where we are. That's the bitter pill that, you know, we try not to swallow. But that's who we are. That's who we are. We have two sides to a coin. And you're changing that dynamic just by doing what you're doing right here. But we have both those sides in us. And the minute we recognize that we have two sides to the coin, then you can consciously make the decision not to live out the dark side. But you can't make that decision unless you really look at yourself and look at where you're coming from and decide to make change. And that's what these neighborhoods are going to have to do, right? They have to decide that we don't want to do that anymore. We want to be with each other. We want to be with humanity. We want us to share together. And you are me and I am you. Right? That's it. That's all of it.
Stop picking on people and start being part of the answer, the solution.
Right. Right.
Fix it instead of making it work.
Fix it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just.
What can we do?
Yeah, well, I mean, one. What can we do? I think one, along the lines that Marvin was talking about, I think really thinking about our compassion for one another, and especially for the most marginalized members of our community. You know, I see all the time the houseless community mourning other houseless people who die outside. And sometimes it's in the paper, it's mostly not. And I see a community of people that I go to work with, and I, you know, I'm on in transit with, and I see at restaurants, who aren't even aware that of the precarity of thousands of people who are on the brink of death, you know, because of the squalor of their conditions, the lack of access to services, and the constant displacement of them by the way we criminalize their lack of housing. And I go to vigils and street funerals, and there is compassion, you know, in Desiree's tears, and I see that all the time. I mean, the community of the unhoused community mourns for these people. Why isn't our community mourning? So what I think, if I could, you know, have one thing, one wish, you know, it's that this is a crisis that is affecting folks that don't have housing acutely. They're the experts on that experience. Their experience is one that we need to be open to and be open to hurting around, and then we need to listen to them. So the one thing is, let houseless people lead and be a part of leading community initiatives that provide solutions to these problems. Listen to them. When I came out to Marvin and the other folks camping there, I didn't say, hey, I've got a Hazelnut Grove Village I'm going to give you. I said, what do y'all want to do? I mean, okay, if the mayor's not going to displace us here, what are we going to do, guys? So they're the experts. They're the leaders. They're the ones that created the community, right? And it's a community that, it's a model that's now being adopted and moved. So, you know, at every level of the conversation, if you go back to your neighborhood and you tell your neighborhood association you want to have a forum around this issue, if you have a faith community you engage with, if you go to City Hall and this issue and these concepts are being discussed, and houseless people aren't in the conversation or they aren't up on the stage, we're not getting there. They need to be involved.
So we can call you.
Yeah, yeah. The Village Coalition is an institution that is working to facilitate the presence and involvement of houseless people in changing perceptions about this issue and listening up and opening up about solutions that houseless people can bring to the table. Mm-hmm. So reach out to the Village Coalition. We're on Facebook. PDX Village Coalition is like the thing after the Facebook.com. Mm-hmm. PDXVillageCoalition.org is the website.
.org.
Mm-hmm. You know, these folks are part of that coalition, right? So this is a big group.
How many people do you have in the group, do you know?
Gosh, it changes, right? But
does
I'd
it
say
change rapidly?
I mean, like the email list is over 100 probably. But
that's, you know, awesome.
And we have general meetings at the Q Center every other Friday at 1 p.m. So not this Friday, but next Friday we'll have our general
next center. Friday at
1 p.m. at the Q Center on Mississippi.
Q Center on Mississippi. 1 p.m. next Friday. Next what? Friday after that. Thank you. I just want to say that I appreciate you all being here. And more than that, coming from a family that really had to fight to get into the city limits, to live here, this is the most important work that I have heard of in a long time. So important. It is the step that that we are all going to have to take in order to be the collective that we need to be to make change. Because until every voice is heard, we can't make change. Every voice has to be heard and represented. And I really applaud you for giving your lives to making this happen, because that's what you're really doing. You're committing your life's work. And this is a beautiful, a really beautiful thing. Yeah, yeah. What do you need us to do?
Love. It destroys fear.
Say that.
Mm-hmm. I can honestly say that when I had it all and I was working hard and making that money and raising my kids, I didn't appreciate the little things. As opposed to now when I had little or nothing, I appreciated that hamburger that would come that my husband would pray for and it would manifest. Just the little things, to be able to see him smile or to be able to cook a wonderful meal for our family. And see them smiling like, whoa, you did it. You won the, Marvin, he says, you won the award of the week. But love. I told them my secret ingredient is love.
Love. Happy meals.
I would rather have people's indifference than their pity.
Oh.
Do you know that Jesus was a houseless person?
Huh.
So was the Buddha.
Jesus?
I think there's been several others. You know, you don't judge us by where we live, how we live. Judge us by what we accomplish with what we have. And what I see when I see my villagers is creativity. And artistry and passion and empathy and compassion and a desire to change things, to do it from a real place, a real heart place. Not we don't have the luxury of excuse my French bullshit. We don't have the time for it. Life is short. You've got to embrace it. If you have passion for these things, come out and see us. Have some coffee. Sit down and eat our food. Make a parlay. We will talk to you. We run like a pirate ship. It's a full democracy. Everybody's welcome. There are no leaders. You can sit down with anybody and have a conversation. We will welcome you.
Say that.
It's true.
No pity.
No pity.
No pity.
No pity. No pity. No pity. No pity. No pity.
Don't feel sorry for us.
The least of these shall lead us. That's truth. Because ego, id, hubris, all of that shields you from the reality and the truth of love, right? Thank you. Thank you. Catholic Charities, you go. We're going to make sure that all them Baptists and Methodists and everybody else gets on the ship. Okay? All the Buddhists, all the Baha'i, all the... everybody needs to get on the ship. Okay? Was this worth your time tonight? Okay. We'd love to see you connect and maybe go out and spend some time. See everybody. We're going to come out and see you. You know, I need to bring my choir. Y'all got to cook a lot because they're hungry people. Lord have mercy. But they'll sing. No, I'm going to make them sing for nothing. They just need to come out and just be with you. You know, we get all in our little hovels and we don't want to break out and see. But I think it's time for all of us to get used to seeing, you know. And everything will become very clear to us. And then we want to thank Darren over there for doing all the good work he does on sound. And the old church, where are you? Where's your comedian folks? Everybody just wave your hand if you're with the old church. There we go. Thank you for having the vision. The vision very much for us to do. We can listen. Our next one is June 13th. It's immigrant and refugee stories. So, yes, we need to come out and get beaten up one more time. You know, if they beat us up enough, we'll finally get it. We need to come and listen just a little bit more. I love the phrase that we use, a monthly cultural intersection of storytelling, documentary, music, and personal expression where all voices have the right to be heard. So we hope you enjoyed it, and we want you to come back. Thank you very much. I'm Julianne Johnson. Good night.
So I got one question. Huh? So you saying you want refugees to come, huh?
Yeah.
So you're saying that you're inviting us back here again.
I'm inviting you back every single time.
Because we are financial refugees.
That's right. You are financial refugees, and you will be back. All right. Thank you very much. Take care and be careful. Going home.
Thank you, guys. It has been a pleasure. I've enjoyed it. Thank
you. Put your hands together one time. I want you to get together. I want you to get together.